House Committee on Ag and Natural Resources for April 29th, 2003. We are not going to hear Senate Bill 673A today. So if you're here for that bill, you may feel free to leave. We are going to hear the rest of the bills on our agenda. House Bill 3270, we are waiting for amendments on that bill, as it is still a work in progress, and we will do our best to work that bill to its completion if possible. So with that, before we get started, I think everybody in the room has heard my spiel about truthful testimony, right? Anybody who hasn't heard it yet?
Don't raise your hand.
Yeah.
Okay, well then we won't go through that spiel today. Welcome once again. We're going to open up a public hearing and on Senate Bill 256A. And David, if you would bring us the sign-up sheet. We have a couple of veterinary bills today, members. Thank you. And these are both sponsored by Senator Schrader at the request of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. So the chair would like to call Marcia Keith and Lori. Is it Makinen?
Yes, sir.
Did I say that right? Wow. Good. Proud of myself.
I've been here often enough.
I know. Welcome to you both. And what are we doing in Senate Bill 256?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Keith. I'm here today representing the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, and we are the requesters of Senate Bill 256. And here up at the table with me is Lori Makinen from the Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and we're both here to testify on the provisions of 256 since they affect the operation of the Examining Board. There are several changes to the Veterinary Practice Act incorporated into Senate Bill 256, and many of them are housekeeping and some of them are more substantial. Mm-hmm. The change in Section 1 of the bill makes the statute correspond to the actual practice by requiring the Veterinary Medical Examining Board, the VMEB, to issue a license to a veterinary technician. It was never clear in the bill, legislative counsel discovered as he was drafting changes to the Practice Act that the VMAB should actually issue a license to a veterinary technician. So we clarified that they should. It moves the definition of the veterinary technician from Section 11, which is repealed, to Section 2, where the rest of the definitions are. And it deletes the requirement that the examining board have a concurrence of four members of the board, because the Senate Bill 203A, which you passed last week, now requires an eight-member board. And so by deleting the four-member concurrence requirement, we'll revert to a simple majority of the eight-member board. It also enables the examining board to impose a civil penalty for each violation of Chapter 686 by a licensed veterinarian. That when the Chapter 686 is violated by a licensed veterinarian, a $1,000 civil penalty is imposed, and that is now clarified that that means for each violation of Chapter 686. That was not clear in the previous language. It also allows the examining board to report alleged violations of the chapter to the state attorney general as well as to the appropriate district attorney. Currently, the district attorney is the only person statutorily enabled to receive that kind of report. And it, it enables the board by allowing the attorney general to also investigate alleged violations of the chapter, it enables the board to perhaps pursue those violations in a more timely manner. It requires continuing education for licensed veterinary technicians, and it clarifies that the criminal penalty for practicing veterinary medicine without a license is a Class A misdemeanor, and it allows the examining board to impose a civil penalty of up to $5,000 for practicing veterinary medicine without a license. The major provisions are the imposition of the $5,000 civil penalty, the requirement for continuing education for veterinary technicians, and maybe that's it. Maybe those are the main ones. Oh, yeah, I think those two are the major provisions. The others are mainly housekeeping. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer, or Lori's here also.
I guess the only question I would have for you is, we have never codified, even you have been allowing veterinary technicians to, in essence, operate as for some time, but we've never codified that. Is that correct?
Apparently, that according to legislative counsel, that is true, that the board has actually been issuing licenses, but is not statutorily enabled to do so. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, actually, it's technically it is correct in a way, but there is language in the statute that authorizes the board to issue licenses, and so our AG felt that we were covered retroactively and that we wouldn't have to go back and undo and redo and all of that stuff. So, but this definitely does make it much more clear, make the authority more clear.
Okay, members, question? Hearing none, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 256 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 256A.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Does this have a crystal or any kind of nothing? Just goes
no.
to the floor?
Just goes to the floor.
Okay. I'll make a motion to move Senate Bill 256A to the floor with a big pass.
Okay. Members, Representative Smith has moved. We move Senate Bill 256 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we put Senate Bill 256A on the consent calendar.
Members, Representative Smith has moved that we put Senate Bill 256A on the consent calendar. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. All righty. Ray, would you do me a favor and would you pass out some of those copies to the folks in the back there? We're going to open up public hearing on Senate Bill 281. And David, if you'd bring the sheet. Another bill by Senator Schrader to request the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. I'm assuming, Marcia and Lori, you want to come back forward again? Wonderful. Thank you. Welcome to you both, for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Marcia Keith. I'm here today representing the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association and am testifying in behalf of Senate Bill 281A. The OVMA requested this bill in order to address an issue in the statutes, and it actually this bill makes two changes to the statute. It enables licensed veterinary interns to administer rabies vaccine, and it also deletes rabies vaccine from the list of hazardous vaccines or products. We worked with the state veterinarian on this bill and achieved his support and encouragement to go ahead and eliminate rabies from that list because it used to be considered a hazardous vaccine because it contained a live virus. And it no longer contains a live virus, so it's not considered a hazardous vaccine. So by eliminating that the rabies vaccine from that list, excuse me, it actually reflects more what the actual vaccine represents in today's world. The intern, the veterinary intern, is a person who has been completely through vet school, is completely qualified to be a veterinarian, is just serving a one-year internship under the direction of a veterinarian. And about the only thing that that intern cannot do by statute is administer rabies vaccinations. So it would be very helpful to have the rabies vaccine be able to be administered by a veterinary intern who can do anything else, operations and all that kind of stuff. So that's what this bill does.
Laura, anything else to add?
No, the board supports this entirely.
Okay. Members, questions? Thank you both very much. I'm going to close. Anyone here else to testify on Senate Bill 281A? Hearing none. I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 281A.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Smith.
Representative
Gilman. Representative
Gilman. Yeah, Representative Gilman.
Your turn today.
Yeah.
I move Senate Bill 281A to the floor to pass recommendation.
Members, Representative Gilman has moved Senate Bill 281A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Representative Gilman?
I move we place 281A on the consent calendar.
Members, Representative Gilman has moved that we place Senate Bill 281A on the consent calendar. Is there discussion? Is there objection? So ordered. We're going to close work session on Senate Bill 281A. We're going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 311. Okay, members, it looks like we have a reasonably simple concept here. We're renaming the Division of State Lands. Jeanette, would you like to come forward, please? Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, Jeanette, for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Krupp.
Go ahead and move it around in front.
I can move it. Okay.
There you go.
I'm always afraid to move
it. No, that's perfectly all right. We want to be sure that you are recorded properly on the record.
Okay. For the record, I am Jeanette Holman, the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance at the Division of State Lands. I'm here today to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 311, which was introduced by Senator Meserle at our request. This bill was submitted originally through the agency bill drafting process, and like many people, only the first part of the bill was looked at, and it looks like it's just a name change. The important parts of the bill are the last four sections of the bill, which have to do with volunteers on state lands. And when it wasn't approved originally through the governor's office, we talked to them and got permission to have Senator Meserle introduce the bill because we didn't want to lose that volunteer part of it. I was hoping to have volunteers from the South Slough Estuary Reserve today with me, but they were not able to make it up to Salem today, so I've submitted written testimony from Ron Steffens, who's the president of the Friends of South Slough. So I've already told you sections 1 to 26 of the bill are to make the technical changes of our name change. We're asking for this for two reasons. One, there is a lot of confusion about what the division is the division of. We have public asking us, you know, what are you part? What agency are you a part of? We have confusion about our name at public hearings and public meetings, as well as many times we're called the department, even though we're not technically the department. We don't anticipate any fiscal impact from this bill, as we don't carry a lot of extra supplies and stuff like that in our agency. We often use DSL rather than the Division of State Lands, again, because of the confusion over the name. The second purpose is to conform this designation to more modern terminology when talking about state agencies, which is a division is a part of a department, and so we're just trying to conform to that. The volunteer agreements part of the bill, Chair Krupp, you probably remember from discussions in our Ways and Means Subcommittee last sessions, some issues about South SLU, and as we began to get more involved with the South SLU Reserve and look closely at some of the activities down there, we became very aware that the Friends of South SLU was an extraordinarily active support group for that area. And in fact, they raised about $150,000 for the renovation of the South SLU Visitor Center. Those folks came to us and asked that we try to put together an agreement similar to what the Friends of Shore Acres have with the state parks. And when we looked at our statutory authorities, we thought we needed to have some of that same kind of authority in order to enter into that agreement. So they asked us to go ahead and introduce this legislation so we could move forward with a more formal arrangement between the two entities while keeping the necessary separation of monies and responsibilities, which we looked at through an internal audit during our review of South SLU last biennium. And that's the impetus for this bill, and we ask for your support.
Thank you, Jeanette. Members, questions? Jeanette, on page 19 of the bill, on sub 4, starting in line 17, talking about any money received from the sale of publications or other materials provided by an organization pursuant to the agreement entered in shall be retained by the organization. Is that legal?
Well, I think right now they sell publications, and that money goes back into their funds because they are a nonprofit organization. So I think it is. They those funds go. That's part of what made up the $150,000 that they donated to the South SLU. Again, that's one of those issues that with this kind of legislation we can spell out more carefully what we want them to do with those funds.
Well, I guess we would have to think about that perhaps a bit. So you define volunteer as any group or person of individuals, volunteer, service club, or any entity that's tax exempt under 5013C of the IRS code. So that could be an organization like the Nature Conservancy.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. So if and they're going to the purposes program is that. As I read it, is that these parties will assist in the operation of department programs and to assist in the maintenance of state lands. So I'm assuming that if they're assisting you, that the department is then promulgating the rules and the management plans and policies for those lands, as opposed to these organizations who may be assisting, correct?
That's correct. Mr. Chair, the language in here was modeled directly after the state parks volunteers in the parks, and we would anticipate this. They're not going to be down there doing things without our direction.
Next question, and going back to my first question on page 19 about the money from sale of publications, those money from sale of publications that the state prints up, but the state's money, or is that done by the organization?
Mr. Chair, those are done by the organization, or in some cases, they're publications that the organization purchases and resells.
Okay. Questions? All right. Thank you, Jeanette. Appreciate it. Anyone here else like to testify on Senate Bill 311? Hearing none, we're going to close a work session, or excuse me, a public hearing portion, and the work session remains open on Senate Bill 311. Chair, would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 311 to the floor for the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Beyer. Members, Representative Beyer moves Senate Bill 311 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I would move to put this on the consent calendar.
Members, Representative Beyer has moved that we submit Senate Bill 311 to the consent calendar. Is there discussion? I see a pained look on your face, Representative Smith.
It's my lunch.
I have to have an excuse for all these faces. Do you think it should be on the consent calendar? My fear is that there might be more depth to this that maybe someone would need to explain.
My guess is there might be some questions.
That would be my guess. So I guess I would object to that motion.
Okay.
Well, I'll withdraw it.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Representative Beyer has withdrawn her motion to place on the consent calendar. Thank you, Representative. Mm-hmm. There may be additional questions such as the nature that the chair has asked. So, thank you very much. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 311. And who would like to carry the bill? Representative Beyer?
Sure.
Representative Beyer will be the carrier of Senate Bill 311. Thank you, Representative. All right. Another easy bill is we're going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 478. And this is another renaming bill, isn't it, Ray?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 478 changes the name of the Office of Energy to the State Department of Energy and changes other various names within that organization. It changes the name of the Office of Energy account to the State Department of Energy account and changes the name of the Oregon-Hanford Waste Board to the Oregon-Hanford Waste Board. Mr. Chair, this came to us with a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Ways and Means.
Mm. Interesting. Well, Michael, come forward if you would, please. Good to see you, Michael, and for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Mike Rainey. I'm Director of the Office of Energy, and the Office of Energy supports Senate Bill 478. It does just change our name from Office of Energy to Department of Energy and the name from the Hanford Waste Board to the Hanford Cleanup Board. It was introduced, actually, at the board's request. They felt that our name... because of the work we do with the federal agencies, changing the name to department would be helpful in that regard. We used to be department until in the mid-90s for a couple of years. We were a division within the office of or within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. That's why the name was changed at that time. This would the agency, in fact, has been out of Department of Consumer and Business Services since 1999, but the name wasn't changed. This would do that. There is no fiscal impact on the bill. I indicated in the Senate that we would use up all our stationery and equipment there or anything with our current name on before ordering new changes if the bill is passed. And I did talk to the Speaker's office about that, and they indicated that they would be fine with a request if the committee passes the bill to resend the referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Members, questions? Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Chairman.
I'm going to close the public hearing portion on Senate Bill 478. We are still in a work session. Ray, do we need to make a motion to rescind first or after we've passed the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you need to make a motion. Make a motion to rescind first.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Gilman.
I move we rescind the second. I never can say that word. referral to Ways and Means of Senate Bill 478.
Okay. Members, Representative Gilman has moved the rescission of the subsequent referral of Senate Bill 478 to Ways and Means. Discussion? Is there objection? So ordered. Representative Gilman?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 478 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Members, Representative Gilman has moved Senate Bill 478 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. What's the pleasure of the committee on this one?
I'll be happy to carry it if you think there's going to be a question. What do you think?
Yes, okay.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 478 be placed on the consent agenda.
Okay, members, Representative Gilman has moved Senate Bill 478 be placed on the consent agenda. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? So ordered. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 478.
Mr. Chair, for the record, that's consent calendar, correct?
Yeah.
Consent calendar, that's correct, for the record. Okay. Two bills left to hear today. We're going to open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 832A. And Ray, why don't you just tell us briefly what this is about?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 832A engrossed allows persons to take wildlife that is a public nuisance or public health risk on land that the person owns or occupies. It defines damaged non-game wildlife in other terms, prohibits baiting or using dogs to take black bear or cougar, except when the bear or cougar is causing damage. It creates a task force on wildlife control activities appointed by the State Fish and Wildlife Director. It directs the task force to study and make recommendations relating to businesses conducting nuisance, damage, and health risk animal control activities. Task force sunsets on December 31st, 2004, and Senate Bill 832A engrossed declares an emergency effective on passage. Mr. Chair, this came to the committee without a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. But it does speak of creation of a task force and gives direction to the task force, to the director of the State Fish and Wildlife Department, and some other things. I'm unsure, and I'll make a phone call to go ahead and check on the status of this.
Sure. And I think we're in public hearing, Terry Witt.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vice Chair. My name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and joining me is Ron England from the ODF&W. Ron can answer any technical questions. I can keep my testimony very brief. The need for Senate Bill 832 arose as a result of some changes that were done in the animal trapping laws, which resulted in an area of animal damage or problems within particularly city limits with animals like raccoons, where the animal control industry could not legally trap and remove these animals without being potentially in violation of ODF&W laws. And particularly in the urban areas, we're seeing a considerable amount of damage being done to structures and gardens and ornamental plants in residential areas by these critters. And current statutes, as I said, preclude these animals to be taken because the damage statutes pertain solely to agriculture and forest cropland. And it's been interpreted by ODF&W that residential yards are not agricultural or forestry croplands. So what this does is creates a new category called public nuisance, which is defined as loss or harm inflicted on gardens, ornamental plants, ornamental trees, pets, vehicles, boats, structures, or other personal property. And this definition would pertain to not only city property, but it would also pertain to rural property across the state. In difference to the summary of the bill, this bill does not do anything to change game mammal laws, nor does it do anything to change laws impacting bear or cougar. We had a little bit of a problem early on in terms of trying to convince some of the animal conservation folks that we could make all of the changes in the 498.012 statutes. They felt very uncomfortable with without making it very clear that we were not changing the statutes regarding bear and cougar, and therefore the second reference was put in the bear and cougar statutes 198.164 to specifically say that we were not changing the definition of damage animal as it pertained specifically to bear and cougar. So the intent is that there would be no change based upon this this piece of legislation. With that, I the bill did pass the Senate by a 29-1 vote, and we urge your support.
Questions?
Okay, Ron. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. As Terry has already related, this has been a work in progress for us, working with the animal control industry, some of the conservation organizations, and some discussions with some various cities. And we feel that this would give us some very clear statutory authority to deal with nuisance wildlife problems and would streamline some of the permitting processes that are currently in place. And we strongly encourage the committee to pass this bill, because it would provide direct relief to landowners in dealing with problems that they're having. Thank you.
Questions? Yes. Any words?
I can go first.
And then Byer.
Let Terry go first.
If I remember right, this is came out of Senator Walker has a constituent that traps animals for homeowners and that type of thing, and yet there are different regulations in different cities. Is that how it is?
Vice Chair Gilman, Representative Byer, basically right now, in order to trap animals causing damage within the city limits, if it doesn't fit within the specific damage statutes, then an individual could not take those animals in any way. And there are some exceptions written into statute. The nuisance type problems are not included in those exceptions. So this bill is written, adds a whole nuisance category that allows people to deal with the problems that in the past we felt we had the authority to allow them to do, but have found through recent legal interpretations that we didn't. And it broadens that out and deals with some of the common problems, coupled with an education process that needs to occur that can help people solve their problems themselves and prevent that in the long term.
Well, and I had learned about this about the same time that I live in a very urban area. I had two raccoons in my tree in my backyard mating and killing neighborhood cats, and couldn't figure out how to get rid of them. So
splash some water on them.
Yeah. Well, that's what we did, but we don't know exactly whose house they're living in now. It's the problem, because they were never trapped. So this would address the ability to go out and catch them.
Chair Krupp, Representative Byer, yes. If they fall within the definitions of the nuisance animal problems, then yes, it would give clear authority that you as a landowner could seek relief in that type of a situation.
Thank you.
I might add, Chair Krupp and Representative Beyer, that the animal control business that you made reference to is Swanson Pest Control, and they are out of the greater Eugene area. They receive anywhere on an annual basis between 200 and 300 requests per year to remove problem, primarily raccoons, that are in structures either inside the house or have decided that the crawl space is a great place to mate and have families, and creates a significant mess. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So under the current law now, if I'm within the city limits, I cannot use traps, correctly? Is that right? And so, follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So what type of traps would this bill authorize?
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, it doesn't define what types of traps could be used. Pretty typically, under our permitting system, when we're dealing with damage, things like that, we're dealing with live traps only. There are some specific circumstances where leg hold traps could be used, but typically if it's within the city, that has to be authorized by the city, and whoever is doing that work has to have a specific authorization to do that. So typically what we're talking about here for nuisance animal control is the use of the have a heart type live trap.
And I'm sorry, what is that?
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, it's a wire cylinder or cage, and you usually bait it, an animal goes in, then it has a door that comes down behind it, and they're just held alive within that until the individual comes out to deal with the animal.
So if I wanted to use something like a leg trap, then I'd have to get permits through the city.
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, like I said earlier, we don't typically just issue any kind of authorization for the use of a leg hold trap within the city limits, because we recognize that that can be a very touchy thing with people's pets and everything else. And we and whoever is doing the work very closely with the city to ensure that the city will authorize that, because there are some general bans against trapping and hunting within the city limits found in statute 498-158, I believe it is, and so it takes some authorization to get there, and so typically, you know, trapping within the city limits, unless it's got specific operation, does not occur.
Yes,
yes,
certainly.
So under this, if this is implemented, this Senate bill, I could, without any authorization, set up one of those wire cage traps to trap a nuisance animal that I perceived in my home within the city limits, or I could shoot it.
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, no one can discharge a firearm within the city limits. That's pretty well locked down. Even our agency has to have some fairly specific authorization from a city to do that, and in general we don't have that. As far as a permit is needed, if it falls within the general categories listed within the damage statutes, if it's not a predator and it falls within those other animal categories, you still would need a permit from our department in order to go ahead and deal with that nuisance animal. And what we've done in the past is we've had some people in places that we've worked with, and we give them a general authorization, and then they report back to us on a regular basis of the work so that they don't have to get individual permits from us. But they end up operating under our guidelines, so to speak, to deal with your problem. But technically, yes, you do have to have a permit before you can go forward and trap that animal.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm sure to follow up again. So what can I do under this bill as a homeowner in an urban area without any permits that I can't do now?
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, unless it's defined as predator, which are coyotes, rodents, mm-hmm. and beaver, and some birds, you have to have a permit to deal with an animal that's causing damage. And damage is defined as damage to agricultural crops, land, forest crops, and in most cases within the city limits, that does not fit any of the categories. The types of damage that we have in the city limits deal with ornamental gardens, ornamental trees, damage to a structure, things like that. It's more the nuisance category. That's what is being added through this bill and would open the door then to deal with those animals like we've been doing, but it gives us clear legal authority to do that.
Hello? So not
absolutely, Representative. You're asking such good questions.
I just remember this. I remember, I don't know which leg trapping bill or initiative that came up. And, you know, so we had homeowners thinking they were just, you know, dancing in the streets like, yeah, we can put out our leg traps because we see this, you know, damage that's been done by a raccoon or something. It's really a kid walking by from school. And so we were, you know, there were
leg traps for kids?
Yeah, they were. That's what we were afraid of, that people were going to put, because they had up in the Timberline area, they were so excited. They were like, oh, we finally can break out our leg traps and you know. And go, and that's what I'm concerned about, is that this will give the impression of those people that, you know, now if you're within the city limits, you go ahead and use your traps, and I just think that would be a tough thing not to get from this legislation. I think that's the impression it gives.
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, again, in order to trap any of the species that fall out as game animals, non-game wildlife, upland birds, you have to have a permit from our department, and we do not issue permits to use leg hole traps within the city limits unless the individual has permission from the particular city. Cases where we've done that, Klamath Falls, they have all the canals going through the city. They hire somebody to trap muskrats, in effect, inside the city limits to protect the integrity of the canal walls. That's not precluded with this bill. It's allowed right now through some other statutes. But that's the type of circumstance that something could be allowed. But we typically do not authorize the use of leg hold traps or snares inside the city limits unless we have gone through some very rigorous and specific conversations with whoever's to do the work and with the city to allow that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wirth.
It doesn't worry me if it's, I mean, people in rural Oregon know how to operate these traps. It's, you know, the people I live, my neighbors, they don't have a clue. And that's what scares me, is that this looks like you're now extending this authority to homeowners, you know, private, my neighbors, to use even the steel trap that I don't even...
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, I think if you read the statute, what we're really trying to do, and what the statute really does, is provide the professional with the opportunity to get in to an urban area and legally take these animals. Right now, they are fearful that if they do, that they would be basically in violation, could not only be fined, but could lose their licenses to operate. This doesn't really change anything with regard to what the homeowner can do. I think Ron was fairly clear in stating that these permits are required for homeowners currently to take these animals. They still will be required. What it will really do is allow the professionals to, with a permit, to go in, and if you have a problem critter in your home, they can now come in and get that, which currently they can't do without being potentially cross-wise with the law.
Let me give you a quick scenario. Don't you think you're going to get, ODF&W is going to get 1,000 calls from people like my mother-in-law who swear that there's massive property damage to her ornamental, you know, flowers by deer, and she wants ODF&W out here now taking care of this nuisance deer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, the laws are very clear that this does not pertain to game mammals, and deer are game mammals. So
I know.
you know,
my mother-in-law didn't know that.
Well, there's...
Is there my ornamental plants?
You can't... First of all, you can't trap a deer. It's illegal to trap a deer. You can't shoot a deer in the city either with a bow and arrow or a slingshot or a firearm. So there's very few ways that you could legally... Matter of fact, I don't know of any legal way you could take a deer within the city limits, unless you could coax it out on the highway and maybe run it over.
I understand. I'm concerned about the perception this gives, and that people will not, I mean, urban dwellers will not go into the details of exactly what this does authorize and whom it authorizes. I'm concerned about the perception it gives.
Chair Krupp, Representative Wirth, I guess to try and ease your fears, we get all of the calls relative to this bill today that we probably will ever get, and there are hundreds per month across the state. And all this bill does is really clarify the things that we can legally do to deal with those problems. Right now we're fairly confined within statute as interpreted on how we can deal with some of those species. This just adds a broader nuisance category that has not been there in the past. And we would share your concern about just willy-nilly going out and doing things. The permitting system's still in place. People typically do call us requesting assistance or help on how to deal with the problem. In those areas where there are nuisance control operators, we can provide a list of operators that they can call on their own to deal with it, or we can give them advice on how they can deal with it and stipulate those conditions within a permit.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Krupp. Thank you. On page 2, section 2, you're amending ORS 498-164. And that is the statute that implemented Measure 18, which we've had much discussion about in here. As this Senate bill is a trapping bill, why do you find it necessary to amend a bear and cougar hunting statute?
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith, as originally written and included within the damage statute, it would have allowed the use of dogs or bait to deal with nuisance bear and cougar. That was not the intent of anyone that had sat down to try and craft the language for the bill. And it was felt after discussion that by putting those specific words into 164, it would preclude the use of bait and dogs for nuisance bear and cougar, and but still would allow it for the addressing damage and the human safety the aspects, which is fit what everybody intended to begin with.
Sure.
Will this language have any effect on the House bill that we just passed if the cougar bear one gets through the cougar gets through the Senate?
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith, we're not sure. We'd have to look at that and see if there would be a conflict there, and if there'd have to be some language changes that would match things up.
In this bill?
Chair Krupp, Representative Smith, I'm not sure which bill it would take the adjustment to.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, in that regard, before I take Representative Byers' question, if you have two bills with conflicting statutory changes, which bill prevails?
Mr. Chair, in this situation, we would have to get a conforming amendment written. And it is clearly, I think, the intent that we're putting forth today is to clearly state that we would in no way want to change the statute. The statute, as it's referenced today, is the existing statute. Should something change, which would allow a different interpretation or the hunting of, say, cougar, for example, we would obviously concur that conforming amendment be made so that this conforms with the other law. So, I mean, that's not our intent is to have neutral impact on the bear and cougar situation, whatever that may be.
Okay, Representative Byer.
Well, this goes back to Kelly's questioning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will say that probably a good quarter of the calls you might have gotten in the Springfield office earlier this year came from my neighbors who were frustrated over these raccoons, and we're pretty much told there's, you know, nothing we can do. So at this point in time, people are making the calls. There just hasn't been much of a way to address their concerns. I mean, I know one call I made, they said they're not aggressive and they won't attack anything. This is after they killed the cat. But so I'm sure there is some frustration from most citizens who call in and get the answer, we can't do anything. So, I mean, that's my little comment there.
Well, thank you, Representative. I am... I've just sent Ray on a mission. He is under the impression that we cannot move this bill until the conflict is resolved. He's going to legislative council to seek advice on that issue right now. So I guess with that, I think we will very simply close a work session on this bill, a public hearing work session, unless there's someone else here to testify. Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 3 or 832 until we get further direction. Thank you both very much. And we're going to open a continued public hearing on our long-suffering House Bill 3270.
And it is the slaughterhouse fire here.
And it does appear that we are, we have a dash 5 amendment. And so basically let me share with you what a dash 5 amendment does. This comes out of our last discussion, members, where we have taken into account the apparent discomfort and nervousness that there exists around the use of the word priority. So we have changed that to the word serious, which in my mind gives this whole concept a much different progression, I guess, in terms of how it would evolve at the Oregon Economic Community Development Department. We also had spent some time negotiating with the counties on precisely how we could implement a 50% property tax exemption for a period of 10 years. We came up with some model language that we had agreed upon initially in our work group that we had, and since then the counties have been unable to get that codified amongst themselves as an organization. Now, what they're asking for is an additional, actually, frankly, they want the opportunity to make a decision as local taxing districts up front as to whether to grant any property tax exemption at all. So we're taking that under advisement at this time. We're not going to move the bill today. In fact, we're being passed out a letter from Gil Rydell of the Association of Oregon Counties regarding this bill. Where he's asking that we either remove those provisions or amend those provisions so that they're an option to local governments within the property tax code where their slaughterhouse is located. So while I've made a good faith effort to negotiate with the counties in that regard, they seem uncomfortable with the language we had put in place for them. So we are considering some additional modification of that. Looking at the language, members, what are your thoughts? Actually, maybe before I ask that, Katie, Greg, you guys want to add anything in this? Why don't you come forward for a moment? I will also say that we tried to insert the language food processing It did not fit within the relating clause. That was at the request of the Oregon Farm Bureau. We were happy to try to accommodate that request. So what we did was we, in essence, entered into the word meat processing, which is defined under what a comprehensive slaughterhouse is defined as. And that is on page 2 under section 3, on starting on line 18. It means a comprehensive slaughterhouse means a slaughterhouse has a rendering facility and a meat processing facility. Okay, that's what that is. Yes,
Mr. Chair, but it says or.
I don't think that means one is mutually exclusive of the other, but I will check on that, because you could actually have all of them in one concept.
Yeah.
You could have a rendering facility with a slaughterhouse that is also a meat processing facility. Okay. You could actually have all three of those, and it would be our intention that if those concepts work together, then they ought to be together.
Yeah.
But I will check on that. I think that's a good point. Thoughts?
Chair Krepp, for the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Cattlemen. We are in favor of the Dash 5s, but are willing to work with the counties on an additional agreement that meets their needs. As for the serious consideration, that was language that we discussed with Farm Bureau and the chair as well. Also, the bill does mention that serious consideration is not limited to the projects described in subsection A, which would be the comprehensive slaughterhouse. This bill also puts together the report on resources and technical assistance that are available through state, federal, and other resources, and that might be one of the largest benefits of this legislation, to make it easier for individuals wanting to enter into these business opportunities to see what is available and help them start applying for the grants. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Greg.
For the record, Greg Addington, Oregon Farm Bureau, and I want to express our appreciation to the chair for his efforts on trying to make something happen here. And we are supportive of the concept. The issue we had is that as Farm Bureau, we represent a broad range of folks involved in agricultural production. And the word priority, it was a little bit of a problem with some of our guys trying to favor one industry over another within the ag community. We've worked through that. We're happy with the changes there. Would have liked to have seen the other food processors be able to fit into that. But I've made a commitment to the chair to go back to our folks soon, right now, and find out if in fact they're okay with the way things are here. And I'm hopeful we can get something done.
Hey, members, it isn't my intention to move this bill today. It would be on Thursday, assuming that we can make some additional amendments to bring comfort and really try to answer everyone's questions. Questions of two panelists? Yes.
I don't know. Mr. Chair, I don't know who can answer this, but I'm wondering if the addition or the specification meat processing facility, would that also... Would a meat processing facility also qualify under the existing tax expenditure, the 1.172 for farm machinery and equipment, which is a credit that applies in conjunction with property use for processing of wholesale farm crops or livestock after harvest has occurred but before sale of the modified or altered products?
Go ahead, Katie.
Chair Krepp, Representative Worth, I'm not 100% sure, and I can find out for you, but I believe that tax credit has to be more directly linked to the farm and to the farmer, where these meat facilities might be bringing in cattle from Washington and Idaho, and they're not in direct correlation with the farm activities. But let me find out for you for sure.
The word livestock is just has got me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that. Okay. Thank you.
We could ask Dexter Johnson that question also, but I think your sense of that is right, Katie. Additional questions? Doris, could you come forward for a moment, if you would, please? Thank you both. Welcome, Doris, and for the record, your name?
Thank you. Doris Penwell from Economic and Community Development Department.
Very good. Question for you. In the change of the wording from serious or from priority to serious, what does that mean to how your department would look at any of these applications?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the department is quite comfortable with saying serious consideration because, of course, we would give serious consideration to any industry group that would come to us to look for assistance, you know, grants, loans, whatever, you know, kind of organizational efforts we might do with them. So the word serious, I think, is serious. Priority did make some people uncomfortable because we have lots of industries and there are industries out there that really need help, just like this whole industry does. So I think it's a good way to express the situation. And I guess I would like to also say that the department would be willing at any time to have any of these industry groups come to us and sit down and talk about the various issues they see for themselves. So with or without the bill, we'd be very willing to do that.
Well, and I do appreciate that. So again, for the record, serious consideration means that slaughterhouses will be given no more of an advantage than any other industry group that would come before you with a qualified application.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that's true. I will say, however, that it's the only industry mentioned in the statute at this point. So, you know, you have to take it seriously if the legislature puts it in the statute. But, in fact, you said in the bill that it has to follow the provisions of any loan grant program or whatever. So that, indeed, would be the way we'd have to look at it.
And even though it would be in the statute, mm-hmm. the statute is repealed in 4 years.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? Representative Smith, you're frowning again. Is that lunch or
no.
just grief? Or?
Trying to read through all this. I did have a question,
sure.
And maybe the chair can answer it. Katie testified on the tax credit that they might be bringing in cattle from different states, and this is Oregon meat products. So I'm wondering why.
Where are you reading? Oh, you're reading on the first page?
Yeah, just generally it's.
Well, I think they're making a statement rather than limiting, thank you, Doris, rather than limiting that these slaughterhouses could only accept Oregon-grown beef.
Okay. I just want to make sure that the bill wasn't precluding that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, are there any further questions, comments? Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 3270 on the -5, soon to become the -6s, and who knows what beyond that? Okay. We close public hearing on House Bill and work session on House Bill 3270. And members, I think we are concluded for today's activity. Thank you all very much. Good work.